Fair.
I'd like to start the show with a shout out to one of our bald brethren. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, Lord. I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Spilling Ink Show. Yes. I am the Jason Lavelle. I am the man with the golden voice and the poison pen, the leader of this rabble. Sorry, Katie, I'm not actually the leader. I know that. With me tonight is a woman whose life has been shaped by the Twilight Saga and the love triangle within, the femme fatale of fanged fiction, the Grecian goddess, Miss Katie Salitis.
Hello. Wow. What do I do with an intro like that? There is no follow-up to that.
In the bottom left corner of your screen, that's left, isn't it? Yes, left. Yes. In a haze of mystery, or perhaps that haze is the souls of all the victims she's brutally murdered in her novels, is the monster of Maine, the mistress of mayhem, J.E. Taylor.
Hello. Yeah.
Man, I really need, there we go. I need some applause here. All right. Now, if you look to the top right of your screen, he's a man that's a father to us all because of his age. Every word he writes is a bestseller, and every breath he breathes gives life to a baby angel. He's a stone cold killer.
I'm so, so fertile in every way, apparently.
He's trying to supplant Lionel Richie as the man with 1,000 hits.
Oh, wow.
He's the hero of the potato state, the Wendigo of Idaho, the Adonis of alopecia, Michael Brent Collings.
Yes.
Yes. I worked hard on that one, guys.
These are rad.
Wow.
I'm just making angel babies constantly now.
Mm. Hello, Dad. Yeah,
right. She's known across the United Kingdom as the woman with the voice of Amy Pond and the heart of Bellatrix Lestrange. In school, she was voted most likely to bathe in her enemy's blood. Every word she writes steals life out of her readers. She's a siren among succubi. From high atop Hadrian's Wall, it's Pippa Bailey. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on the bottom center, on the bottom center of
in
your
the groinal region.
Groinal region is a man.
That's awesome. You're the genitals of the split screen.
The genitals of the split screen.
He lost his hair climbing straight out of the bowels of hell. The glory of his baldness is matched only by the girth of his goatee. He's a lifelong member of the Spice Girls fan club, and his favorite songs are Eight Rabbits a Week and Sergeant Bunny and the Lonely Lagomorph Club Band. He's been called the South African Jason Lavelle. It's Mike Pilgrim.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to just make a slight quiet request here. Can you follow me around and like just go into rooms and like just herald me where I go places? No one's going to give a shit, but it'll be wonderful at the same time.
My introductions are not done because
that is really
behind the scenes here. He's just a little guy, but he's also important. And we all start out at little guys as little guys.
Most of them are my children.
That's right. That's right. They do. But this little guy is an inspiration because he started out as the size of a grape, but he's growing. He's thriving. He's stronger. It's Mr. Gilbert the Cyst.
Yes.
Yes.
and everyone just goes.
Well, he's directly.
This is a weird show.
Yeah, there's some weird shit going on.
I'm honestly waiting for this kind of like, oh, special guest this evening. Phil Collins is here. The song.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh, okay. I gotta turn my light back on. That was fun though, guys. I'm exhausted already.
I expect that to happen show. Every week now, Jason.
Mm. Yeah,
I show every week.
Oh, I've
been studying at
today.
The Dave Robinson School of Introductions.
Who is Dave Robinson?
Robinson? Sir Robinson of the Round Table Podcast. I think it was formerly Round Table Podcast. It's Archivos now. If you're into kind of storytelling and all this kind of stuff, just get that shit in your ear holes ASAP.
Okay.
His voice is golden butter, and it's beautiful and story gold, man. Totally, ooh, totally awesome.
I like it. I like
Dave is the man.
Dave is he's, you know, if Michael Brandt wasn't here, you know, Dave would be my dad.
Wow. Nice, nice. Maybe
because I'm a duplicitous little shit.
Maybe it's like with dogs where you can actually have more than one father in the same litter, and so you've got both of their DNA in you.
I didn't know that. Ew.
You can. Yeah,
that sounds fun. Like chimpanzees.
So for all of you out there, most of you know Katie, Jane, and I, but you might not know these three beautiful bald guests that we have here. So who wants to go first and make an introduction?
I can slide out the camera and go away.
Crickets.
After that introduction, how do we even follow that?
I'm racking my brain. Like, what's alliterative? What starts the same sound as Michael Brandt? That's not an easy word to like.
Heichel Schent.
Yeah, like I can't rhyme crap with that.
Dent, rent, scent.
Oh, shut up. I'm not talking about you. You're obviously smart. I was like, how are your books so good? Well, I take 6 months writing a very few words. That's how.
Hey. I go for the simple shit, all right? The easy stuff.
I'll go first so we can get me out of the way since my name sucks. And you guys can all think of alliteration stuff. My name is Michael Brandt Colling.
Big time.
Hey, I'm super. Oh, nice. People are helping. Someone's like giving. Everyone's pointing out what an idiot I am for not being able to rhyme my name. Thank you. My name is Michael Brandt Collings. I'm an international bestseller. I am best known for horror. I'm a multiple Bram Stoker Award finalist. But I've had bestsellers in science fiction, thrillers. I even write Western romance under a pen name. So, yeah, that's me.
And that's pretty impressive. You know, I saw a post of yours. This must be a couple months ago now. I can't do time. Time is difficult. But where you were saying that now you're a bestseller in every genre you write. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
phenomenal. I'm more bestsellery in some than in others, but
bestsellery. I like it. In my head, that's spelled like celery.
I know that's on purpose.
Totally.
Rhyme that.
Hashtag bestsellery.
That's bestsellery.
Because you don't have to be a bestseller. You can just feel like I'm feeling bestsellery. And people go, "You look bestsellery today," and you go, "Thank you." Rhyme something with Michael Brandt.
You know what?
Worst vegetable ever.
Worst celery. Yeah. All right, I'm done. Someone else do it.
All right, Pippa Bailey.
Hi, I'm Pippa, and I write horrible stories. I think I've been part of best-selling anthologies. I'm part of our own anthologies we write with Pugnacious Press, which is our publishing company. We do podcasts on the Deadflix and video reviews and video talks and stuff like that. And mostly I just write really, really horrible stories with no limits to what I will write about because I'm nice like that.
But she's not lying.
Oh, no. She's not. You've all seen right. The queen stuff.
The rest of my books are just a bit damp. You open them and they're just like, ooh, sticky already.
All right, Mike, tell us about yourself.
Basically, I'm bald and I'm here and it's late.
what do you write, Mike?
unlike Michael Brandt, I also cannot rhyme. though I'm to understand Michael Brandt rhymes with orange.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Which I think is a tidy one for future. Basically, I'm a horror writer, and that's kind of what I tell people. I'm tired. I write with Pip and my partner and my partner. We've basically review movies and all like across on Deadflix. We've got a publishing company through Pugnacious Press. Like Pip said, we run a couple of different Patreon campaigns. We do film commentary. We tell disgusting stories that have no bearing on anything to do with the films. And we swear a lot. We've got a couple of books out that folks can check out if they like. They're kind of holiday themed anthologies, and I'm a pumpkin enthusiast.
Nice.
Yeah, pumpkins in the background.
Yeah. I like the whole blanket fort he's got going on in the background there.
Oh, yeah. That's the running machine.
Yes, it's the elliptical cover. Actually, this blanket was made for me by Mercedes Yardley a couple years ago.
Oh, Mercedes, I love
her.
She's
so awesome. She's in one of my books.
Oh, really?
The Longest Con?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's such a fun person too. And when she does trade shows, she's got her little voodoo dolls that she brings.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love to have a voodoo doll of so many people.
I'm like, careful.
You shouldn't let me have one though. You would be very evil.
Jason, you're getting hairier. What is this?
Oh, this is my my cat that doubles as a microphone fluff. I'll introduce you. This is Leah. Leah.
Oh, geez. I thought you had a disembodied cow butt on your lap.
I saw the camera going down and I was picturing something completely different.
Look at this, baby.
How about we don't see your cat? Yeah. That would be awesome, too.
Come over to my flat, baby. See my cat do backflips.
It's a live dead cat. You're exactly right. And for knowing what that's called, too.
Spacey, very bonus points there.
Yes, exactly.
So I have to tell my cat on my lap story just really quick. It's apropos of nothing. But I was dating this girl and we were watching a movie in her loft and I fell asleep. And the next thing I know, I feel this puncturing pain in my groin, which I'm like not happy about. And I'm still half asleep. So I grab the offending thing and just throw it. And I literally wake up to because I just chucked it right off the side of the loft and we broke up.
I love how you're like, well, I wasn't so pleased with the puncturing in my groin. You know, if she asked first, it'd be fine.
I thought I was totally in the right on that. I'm like, how if I come over and stab you in the groin? I bet you're like, get the knife away. You wouldn't be all, maybe it's a cat, you know? Sorry, anytime someone says cats, I just have to tell, because like, how many people can get a laugh off of this? One time I chucked a cat off a second floor.
Honestly,
it's all in marketing.
Yeah, a lot of people. It depends if you're a dog person or not.
Oh, yeah. Pro dog, totally. Yeah, no. Don't trust them.
You shouldn't. Cats are evil.
They are. They're evil little buggers. They really are.
Yeah.
But then why are you never in your house?
You never look over in your house and see a cat dragging its butt along the carpet by its front legs, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
very
true.
But you never see a dog sitting in that happen. It just came across the door. Like it comes in and it appears like my hand and it just went butt, and then it disappeared. And I'm just cracking up and my wife's like, what's so funny? I said, it's not really, because someone's gonna have to go clean that brown mess, but what I saw was hilarious.
You know, when my wife and I first got together, she had been married before, and so she had two kids. And at the time, what is happening? Cat, stop touching stuff. her daughter at the time was 4 years old when we all moved in together. And they're great kids. I love them, of course. one night, we're sitting on the couch and we're watching House MD, because that was our show at the time.
That was good.
That was good stuff. I think it was like 13 years ago, 12 years ago. Mm. And we hear this splattering sound, just this like a waterfall coming from the hallway, and we're like, oh god, what's happening? So my wife,
damn you incontinence.
My wife walks down the hallway and my daughter had barfed off the top bunk onto the floor, but only on the floor. There's like this little wooden dance floor, princess dance floor kind of thingy. And my wife can't do it. She won't do it. So she sends me in there. I'm like this new stepdad, like new, a couple months new.
You're like, is this the only reason you got me?
It's a sea of vomit. Oh. And I've got to scrub it out of all the little lines between the wood on the dance floor. It was...
Oh. I would have just thrown away and been like, the princesses aren't dancing in this kingdom anymore.
I thought this was going to turn into another cat story, and you'd be like, the cat had been asleep on the floor.
I was waiting for the same punchline.
Yeah. I was like,
and there are these three kittens covered in sick.
Yeah.
And then we broke up.
And we needs to end with, and then we broke up.
And then we broke up. Okay, so I have one more cat story. And this happened to a friend of mine. His dad kept killing their cats, but it wasn't on purpose. So the story's not gruesome. But, like, the cats would sleep under the wheel well of his car. So he kept driving out to work and going bump, bump, and then having to go in and give the news to the kids. So he had this ritual where he'd walk around the bottom of the car and check the cat for cats every time. And he had done that. He did his dad job. He starts driving and got to the first stoplight stop and heard, and this thing just flew forward because the cat had slept on top of the car. He wasn't checking on top of the car. So this cat just keeps going. So he had to turn around again. Did you run over the cat? No. I did not.
Not this time.
Cat's still dead, but it got different dead this time.
Oh, God. Cat breaks are not so effective.
Oh my gosh. Well, that was a heck of a way to start the show. Welcome, guys.
Well, excellent.
So I've had the pleasure of reading stories from all three of our guests tonight. And I've read short stories from Mike and Pippa and novels from Michael Brent. And these guys are amazing, and they're all so totally different in style. And I read your short story book just recently, Michael Brent, and I think that I read the short story about the Darkling Smiles, Terminal, The Deep, and Predators. And I think that by far still my favorite is Predators. I am so in love with that book. It was incredible. And you know, if anybody out there wants to know how to write a damn good female character, check out Predators, and it's scary as
should we do the logline challenge so we can kind of get an idea of what these stories are about?
Oh yeah, logline challenge. Something
else. Just promise that she didn't she breasted boobily down the stairs.
No, and that's one of the things that always pisses me off. It's like every black person is the color of some dark food. It's like his cocoa butter shaped, colored skin or whatever. Like white people never his skin was like eggnog. I mean, you never
read. I'm so using that.
And there was a comedian who said, what you need to do is you need to go to a home improvement store into the paint section and find your color.
There you go. That I don't want to find my color because there's probably some revolting color that would be me. It's like, oh, dead mushroom, that's me. But
today's curry.
Forgotten avocado.
Yesterday's curry. You know that smell in your house? That's the color of you. I hate the whole every single time a woman walks in and it mentions the shape of their boobs, and I'm just like, I don't know, my wife is really pretty, and I know for a fact the first thing I didn't think was those are shaped like cantaloupes. Let me think. it's just such a revolting thing. And so I wanted to write this total girl power book, and that was Predators, and I had a lot of fun. So it's about a safari that goes horribly awry, and the survivors are left in the middle of nowhere in Africa, miles away from anything, in the middle of the hottest summer on record. And so everything out there is very hungry, and pretty much the only people who make it more than halfway are women. So it's this band of women being hunted by hyenas, which are a matriarchy. So it is a tough woman on tough female animal sort of survival story.
That sounds cool.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
It was excellent.
Are they topless? just to undercut all of
right.
How far can I throw this gin?
Only the attractive people.
Just in your face, dear.
Do that. Alcohol abuse.
No, there's no toplessness.
So, Pippa, would you mind reading this comment for us from Stacey Smakowski?
I love Pippa saying boobily. That's awesome.
See, we still got our boobs into that story.
Fantastic. Snuck in.
Oh, I have a friend who's recently been taking quotes from books and posting them, and it's all these ones where it's really poorly written stuff about women, and it's just one of them was just sort of like, oh yes, she's normally so happy and her breasts are proud, and now they're deflated and sad, and I'm like, they deflated, she's got depressed breasts.
I'm gonna see if I can find them.
I've never understood proud boobs, but I do understand deflated.
Wait, your boobs just look sad, honey. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Why are your nipples frowning?
Yeah, you usually such a happy boob girl.
Just how to have proud boobs.
Yeah, yes.
Is it like resting tit face? It's just kind of like.
Oh, that's a good one. We need that on a shirt.
Nice. Oh, Rebecca Jones.
Except you're gonna get a lot more motorboats than you like wearing that thing.
I am straight gonna use the sad boobs thing though. Like next time my wife's mad, I'm gonna be like, "Honey, I can tell from your angry boobs that you're upset at me." That's you, me, and your boobs. Sit down and talk about this.
When you hit by one, then you know.
Right. That's gonna go super good. I can tell. She'll love that when she's mad.
Oh yeah.
At me.
So wham bam memory slam.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So has the pun.
No, I'm amused by the fact that it started out with like your book's so full of feminine power, and now let's riff on boob the next time. I guess it's okay because the women started it, so it's fine as long as the women.
No, I started it. They're rolling it. So direct all your hate this way, thank you, folks. Oh,
but positive women and strong women in books, love it. Mm.
Yeah. We're getting a lot of it nowadays with kind of.
So here's the thing too, is like.
Tumbleweed.
Sorry. What? No, carry on, Michael Brandon. I'm just rambling. I'm serious. Like I just opened my
article. So when I wrote Predators, a lot of people said that they're like, oh, it's a real woman, you know, female empowerment sort of piece. And I actually don't like that phrase because I have yet to meet a woman who's not powerful. You know, I think people are inherently powerful and we can't give them that. They're born with this wonderful power. And the best we can do is maybe point it out to somebody who's forgotten or maybe show them that with, you know, they can nurture it. But like saying an empowered woman, it's like somebody, well, this woman was born weak and small. So somebody gave her a present and now she's powerful. And I actually dislike that.
Mm. Oh, that's good. They should just give us weapons.
Yeah. Katie loves weapons too. So we all. Yeah, Jane might look sweet over there, but she's not.
She is not afraid to kill people in books.
No,
in
books. No. Well, we know of.
Yes, in books.
There's a lot of unsolved murders in the Northeast.
Hmm.
The short little thing doing it? No.
Oh, nice.
So less than 5 feet.
Nice. I just like that song. I keep my concealed carry in my bra. That's rad.
That's one way to lose a nipple.
Look at the next comment.
That's an unhappy nipple situation coming, just waiting to happen.
It's a boob.
That was one of those kind of like positive statements on your area. Oh, so what have you got back home? We got lots of unsolved murders.
Yeah. Come and visit. You'll love it.
So everybody here, well, Katie, you don't really write horror, but you do write some really dark stuff. Everybody here writes a variety of things and some really dark stuff. What kind of got you into this genre? I mean, were you naturally attracted to the darkness, or what got you into writing horror or dark fantasy or whatever it is you write?
I was weird as a kid. And my dad gave me Cabal by Clive Barker, and I continued the weirdness. And I had an accident. Not literally just now, that story.
Too much gin.
I damaged my spine.
Wear a catheter.
I damaged my spine, and I had to learn how to walk again. And while I was stuck on bed rest, I started a YouTube review channel, and I started writing little bits. And other people are like, oh, you should totally write for this book. And then it just kind of completely just spiraled. And I was like, oh, I'm a writer now, I guess. Cool. I'm going to carry on writing horrible things. And that was kind of it. I've just not stopped for about 5 years. But I can walk now, which is always good.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, the accident was I coughed. But I've got a genetic condition that means that I'm really bendy and everything breaks really easily. And I compressed a disc and my spinal column by coughing. Because I don't do anything by halves.
Holy hell. You're like Mr. Glass, only a little different somehow. I'll work on
it.
Yeah. But Jane, what about you? How did you get into this?
Stephen King.
Oh yeah.
I picked up some of his books and I read some of George R. R. Martin's earlier short stories that were just fantastic. And I like getting scared. You know, I'm the kid that you know made my sister watch The Exorcist and locked her in the basement. You know, all things like that.
Is she still there?
No, but my brother and I were playing with her in the basement. We're like, we're done playing. We left her down there. And she's scared of basements.
Oh no.
I told you she would kill.
My mom said when she heard that story, she cried.
Oh. That's because it's awful.
Yep. Did you put her in a bald cap before you put her down the stairs?
What? No.
We can't understand you, Mike.
No. And my sister and I are really close. So.
Yeah, she's never more than a basement away from me.
Exactly. Chained to the wall on the floor.
Mike, tell us how you got into this. Only do it in your Afrikaans voice.
Oh God, no!
Come on, man!
I'm so much going to get troubles. Everyone's going to take the piss from me because I'm talking like this. It's a mockery of the homeland speech. Okay, so I wake up one day and I like weird shit. And my mother, she's not into that so much, so she discourages it by giving me like Rocky Horror Picture Show, that kind of movie. And I watch that stuff. You can't understand. I can't understand neither. It's okay.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah. So I was just a weird kid, like very much like Pip. And you're kind of in that in between, like in South Africa, you don't have kind of the internet and things are not quite as common as they are everywhere else in the world. So what ended up happening was basically I just went down the VHS hole like everybody else did and discovered kind of Terminator 2 when I was in like high school. High school English teacher basically made us watch this film like 8 times throughout the year. So he's like, finish your poems. We're going to watch T2 now. And we just watched this thing on repeat. And this was my first kind of foray into real like grown up adult films. And subsequent to that, I'd spend my my holidays just digging through old VHS tapes and renting out piles of like 20 for like 10 Rand for like 8 days and just going down there. Then I got into music. I did a whole bunch of stuff. And about 5 years ago, I just kind of woke up one day and said, the NaNoWriMo thing, I want to try this thing out and started writing formally. And about 6 months into that project, I basically realized that I'd basically been writing my whole goddamn life and never really realized it. So I've got notebooks aplenty and all the other stuff that goes with it. I am not one for telling stories tonight, so I'm going to defer this to somebody else as quickly as possible. I'm particularly useless and particularly rambly, and I'm bringing nothing. I'm just talking at you all.
You are the sex appeal. You
That's
don't
right.
have to talk.
You don't.
I just stand there and be like, every once in a while.
Oh, I agree.
Lick your lips, Mike.
Mute me.
Yeah.
Oh,
damn
it, Pat. Oh, if only I was on the other side of this.
Pip is ready to go now.
Right, bedroom, you now.
Yeah. We're going to finish early. Just turn off the mic, please.
Well, I don't want to turn him off. That doesn't work.
Yeah. That's the role of the show, guys.
Great show. Goodbye.
Yeah.
he's like a sexy white orc. I like it. He's good. Like,
and now everybody's staying away from your parties.
That was a backhanded compliment.
No. Do you remember the white orc?
Why is it always about Hobbit? Race with you whenever an orc comes up?
It is. It's definitely a race thing.
Oh, Michael Brandt, could you tell us how you got into this crazy business?
No, because I wasn't compared favorably to an orc, so I'm not. Oh my gosh. A white orc, by the way, don't, you know. I don't see race when I'm looking at orcs. I just see the orc.
No.
It's not true. I'm bigoted against orcs. I got into this because my dad was literally the world expert on Stephen King for about 20 years. And so I grew up with screaming or typing or both in the next room. And my dad, he had this huge library in our house of well over 10,000 books. And he walked me in and said, you can read all of these books. And he pointed to kind of all the ones on the lower shelves. If you can read it, or if you can reach it, I'll let you read it, because it was kind of ordered that way. So I discovered step stools soon thereafter and went up a couple of shelves and started reading stuff. So and I loved Stephen King when I was little, and Dean Koontz, and there was people that would come over to our house kind of randomly, like Frank Darabont, before he was anybody came to our house for dinner. He was kind of friends with my dad through the Stephen King connection. And then my parents were getting invited over to Dean Koontz's house periodically, and my mom would call him dad because she's like, I want him to adopt me. And so I just kind of grew up in that environment. And Dean's, by the way, he's the nicest guy. So he would write back and say, dear daughter, you know, and he'd write letters and stuff. And so I just kind of was involved in that atmosphere. And then I always liked to write because I was this little kid, you know, and I was smart and I was really sassy. I was mouthy. And so people didn't like that. And I was too small to do anything about it. And so but I could murder him in a story without repercussion. So yeah, it just kind of started. And then I ended up being a lawyer because I like to write, but I tell people, like, I didn't want to be kind of the writing equivalent of that 40-year-old rock star who's like trying to get dates and be like, I'm going to make it any day, babe, you know? So I was a lawyer, and then I just wrote on the side, and eventually it started working. And so now I'm just full time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Captain Trainwreck, tell us how you got into this.
See, I'm nearing 40 and I'm still doing that. I'm going to make it one day, one day.
Yeah, me too.
Shoot,
you never feel like you're going to make it. I just didn't want to be saying it in my mom's basement, guys. That's all I'm saying.
Oh.
That feeling, that desperation, though. Damn it, just one more book. The next one's going to be the bestseller, I swear.
Kate, you partnered up with me.
That's the one. That's the one that's going to hit it big.
That'd be awesome for both of us.
Well, who haven't we gotten? Who haven't we talked to about this?
You, Jason.
We didn't get Katie or Nick.
We didn't hear from Captain Trainwreck. I interrupted and I didn't hear her story. Tell us how you got into this. I'm going to take over the host, Jason.
Oh, look at that.
You got it, man. You got it.
Oh, yeah. Your job now, Jason.
Hey, you just the 6 people on the host just went up like 20%.
Dude, well, 20. And Michael Brandt has done a TED Talk, so it's like, you call the ball, buddy.
Yeah, we're not worthy. Well.
Just pull the plug, man. We're not worthy.
Yeah, it's sitting on YouTube with its 1,000 views, so my head's not getting too big.
Hey, it's still there, though. That's all that counts.
More views. I want to hear Captain Trainwreck's story. Tell us.
I don't write horror, like Jason said. I do kind of veer into thriller every so often, but I am a great big chicken, and things scare me. Back when I was little, my brother was 10 years older than me, and he would get put on babysitting duty, and he would bring all his friends over, and they would have these horror movie marathons, and he would not tell me to get out of the room, and I would sit there and just do these marathons and scare myself shitless. So I don't do horror very well, but I do like thriller, and I've always just kind of liked to tell stories, but I tell stories better on paper than I do in person, because you can always edit to perfection. So it kind of worked out.
Nice.
Baby, let's see the tattoo.
Just got a new tattoo. We got to make her big. How do we make her big?
How do we make her big?
Sparkle Brent. He knows what
that's
he's doing.
Really pretty.
Is it a? Oh, good. It's better big. It looked like a, when it was little. I was like, is that a peacock pooping a diamond? Because that's all I was getting out of it. Actually, it's much prettier big.
That was the symbol that inspired this book series.
Oh, brilliant.
That's rad.
Oh, Stacy adds in that your video now has 1,037 views, Michael Brent.
What? Someone watched it today. I don't check every day.
Liar. You know you do.
So I got into horror and scary stuff. Not so much differently than Jane. You know, I was a huge Stephen King head. You know, my stepdad was big into Stephen King, always had his books lying around. So I'd always go and pick them off, and he always had Dean Koontz and Clive Barker there. So I would read those. And so when I was in grade school, I started writing these little short stories that were like kids in my classroom were the characters, and they always ended up in bloodshed. So they didn't get a very good response from the class and the teacher.
I used to have dogs in them, and they all died at the end. And my father gave me one of the books that I had written.
Killing dogs. No.
Dude, you were the creepy kid from The Ring.
Yes. Yes.
They all died.
Well, and I like so many of us who write, and not all of us, because some people who write are super popular and people, and but I was, you know, I had issues where I, you know, I kind of felt, you know, alone. I felt a little alienated in my life now and again, and so writing was really a fun way to just exercise my brain and try not to feel bad. And the same with reading. You know, people say get lost in a book, and really that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to get myself out of reality and go somewhere cooler, even if it was a horror story. And you know, and that's something I guess I'd really like to talk to you guys about, especially our horror writers here, is that because there's a lot of people with different feelings on this. When we write horror, do you think that we're writing it to kind of expel some kind of demons that are within us? Or is it just a completely creative thing that comes off the cuff? You know, are we trying to get something out of us by doing that?
There's a cathartic element to it, I think, in all writing.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
When I was a younger chap, much more hair, and I hadn't quite worked out my way in the world. We used to frequent this icky, disgusting, despicable, sticky floored club called 54. And it became this situation where you'd go and you just see these kind of aggravated people and fights, and you'd go into the bathrooms and all the mirrors were broken. Every time you went in, they'd replace the mirrors and they'd break the mirrors and they'd replace the mirrors and they'd break the mirrors. And almost like the distinct contrast was when I was able to leave and go to rock clubs, this other place down in Durban, particularly a place called Burn. And you'd see people moshing, and they've got piercings all over their faces, and they scream on the dance floor. And just not a single bloody broken mirror in the entire place. And I think horror is like that. The guys, it's a way to channel this and give it a place in the world and get it out of your soul and give you this kind of level serenity in the universe, whatever form that might take, whether you're kind of like raging against the machine or screaming on the dance floor or writing terrible things happening to good people or terrible people, whatever it is. It's about getting the poison out and expressing it and sharing it with other people. And I think that that's the core of the entire thing.
Yeah. That's a good answer.
Broken mirrors.
Came as you were talking.
Whereas I'm like the other end. Like for me, with writing, it's not feeling like I need to get something out, but it's like I just have this idea itching at me and I'm like, I really want to see where this could go. And then it just becomes this obsession. And normally it ends really horribly. But it's just kind of, I don't know, I suppose I end up putting parts of me in all the stories I write. There is always something real in everything I write, like something from my life or a person from my life. And I suppose that way I do get to kill off a lot of people I don't like. Yeah. Legally.
Yep.
But it's yeah, I think it's more, it's just like ideas niggle at me and I wanna follow them. I really want to follow them. And it's a lot of the time I end up with science things and it's theories, and I'll come across this sort of a theory about something. I'm like, that's really interesting. What happens if I combine it with eating organs? You know, something like that. Just, yeah.
What doesn't go good with that question?
Haggis.
I'm just thinking, like, use that question in every, just like, would this go good with organs? Just for everything. Like, you're at the supermarket and you just ask, would this go good with organs? And
it's something to ask your children. Like, yeah. Daddy, can I have an ice cream? Mm. Will it go well with organs?
Yeah.
So then we need an organ sommelier.
Oh, nice.
Yep, smells like liver.
Well, Stacy Smakowski has posted an Orson Scott Card quote that says, "Evil is more entertaining than unrelenting goodness, because any depiction of life without evil is a lie." And then she says, "It also helps us cope and feel alive." I like that. Very good post.
There's a lot of truth to that, because if we don't have bad elements, there's nothing to fight against them. There's nothing mm-hmm. to overcome mm-hmm. them. And it's that drama that adds the spice to life or the spice to stories. So, yeah.
Because you can't measure evil without good, and you can't measure good without evil. You kind of have to have the counterbalance.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
it also makes you feel thankful for where you are.
Yes, exactly.
If someone's having their arms hacked off, you know, you feel a little better about your shitty.
It's not me.
Oh, that's a real thing that we wanted to talk about was we listened to Universal Horror. There's a book, Touched the History. One of the biggest things they found is when the world is a scary place, for example, we're at war, or the topic that I'm not allowed to discuss happens in the world, people are more inclined to watch horror. Because when the world is a scary place, you need something to tell you it's not really that bad. You're not being stabbed to death. You're not being, you know, chased around the house by somebody with a knife, or, oh, look, something's crawling out of your TV. It's going to lick your feet and eat you. Well, you know, everything's a lot. And horror just sells. I mean, that we're seeing this huge resurgence in horror right now. And it's almost like it was in the 80s where it was just, it's in the cinema. There's big named actors and actresses in it. And it's just so much fun.
I kind of disagree with the resurgence of horror. I think what we have now is Netflix, that's an aggregator who's telling us how popular horror is and giving us numbers. Whereas if you said horror is super popular 10 years ago, people would be like, no, it's not. But if you drill down, I mean, it's always been there. And I think part of it is it's like, well, at least I'm not getting my arms cut off. But I think part of it too is that horror exists in a universe where there's an inherent rightness and an inherent wrongness, because without the right, I mean, if a horrific thing happens in a horrific universe, it's just normal. And so when we put these horrific things into a book, there is this back end reminder that this isn't all. There's the good framework out there. And I think horror is inherently and tremendously hopeful. Because even in the books where everything ends badly, you're set up from the beginning. But the reason this affects you, dear reader, that way is because you live in a world full of good things. And so it can really remind us, and not just, well, I'm glad I'm not getting my arms broken, but hey, I live in a world where this appears bad. And so I must actually be okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that is what makes horror so very powerful and so very enduring, is that it gives us an understanding of the sort of blessed or lucky or favored position we actually hold.
Dang. See, that's why this dude does TED Talks.
Stacy, check how many views.
All right, so we have a question out here from Rebecca. It's not on our Why Do You Write Horror topic, but I'm trying to find it here. But anyhow, Rebecca Jonesy wants to know if Mike Pilgrim plans to write any single horror novels or single novels.
I've got them. We are in the process of editing The Sons of Bitches. Just life is life. I've got a this is this is like the last time we spoke, Jay, is I am not wording well tonight at all, and that is embarrassingly bad.
He prays pretty gooder than he speak 'em, folks.
Yeah, no, let's let the
folks know what time it is there, so that'll sort of.
It's
1:45 in the morning.
Yeah,
we've been at the source all day, hanging out with Pip's folks,
the in-laws.
We sat in a hot tub. It was awesome. Then we came home and napped.
Yep. Yes.
Now you've aged yourself. The words are not wordling correctly. They're not boobling boobly.
Yeah. So people don't know what. Wait.
I know. Anyway,
for those of you who came late,
what I've got is I hate using the word series because it burns my ass because everything's a series nowadays. But it's basically Pumpkin Guts is Goosebumps for grown-ups. So there's a lot more breasticles. There's a lot more bloodshed. There's screaming and bonking and misbehaving and just all the terrible stuff. I'm just reading Stacey's comment here. My kids tired, but seriously, you could say boobly, and I would totally okay with it. Keep talking, Mike. I missed the end. That accent is making me happy. Yes, books forthcoming. There are 5 of them. They all take place on the same Halloween evening. The stories are somewhat interconnected, but are not reliant on one another. You've got a guy who gets trapped in the dark of his cupboard and things that get chased away by lit pumpkins, and you've got evil trick-or-treaters, and there's a lot of allusions to this in our collected fiction, in our bite-sized collections. Pip and I tip our hats to a lot of our own private stuff in what we do there. And yeah, so there is stuff. It's in this final edit stage and has been for some considerable time. Basically, we've been contending with neighbors that cook fish in ungodly hours that comes through the walls that sounds like the worst brothel you've ever imagined.
Gross.
I had a roommate who freaking microwaved fish sticks, and we lived in a desert, so it's like 127 degrees, and I'd run from my car to the house, and the first thing that would hit me is this blast of microwave fish stick smell.
This is just we've put tape around the plug sockets in the bedrooms, can't try and stop it coming through the wall. And it's just like it's like we're there, and it's like 9:45, and we're like,
oh, it's bedtime.
Why are they cooking fish now? But it's not like someone's having cod or haddock. This is, you know, cat like restaurant bin fish smell outside garbage, and it's like,
and it spills one, like the bedroom just goes poof.
and it's the bedroom that it hits.
Well, that's sex done for the evening. We'll go in the lounge.
Are you sure it's just not Mike? Because I blame all sorts of weird smells on things in my house. And
my friend, we've got
Little Mermaid action going on.
This is the fish that all the other fishes cross the road to avoid.
He's sort of the white orc of fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, Pippa, it's funny that you mention Little Mermaid. So I've been meaning to ask you, because I know you're working on a project. How do mermaids get it on?
I knew you were excited on that.
Oh God! Okay, so I've got a series which is an erotic comedy horror series, and it's all about a woman who is given a book, and she, whatever she draws in the book comes to life, and she's particularly lonely. And the idea is that you can draw whatever you want in this book, and it will appear between the hours of 3 and 6 a.m. And if you draw the right thing, the thing that your heart truly desires, it will stay. And so she just is like, she just starts drawing. She draws an incubus and some other things. She draws a merman, and he turns up, and she's like, "Where's your thing?" And so the rest of the story, she mostly is just sat on his face in a bathtub until he finishes and sprays the walls in like fish goo. And she's like there as a roommate looks in, and she's like, "It's just conditioner." After he disappears at 6 a.m. and she's just scooping the stuff off the wall, and the housemate does the, you know, something about Mary. Oh, awesome. but yeah, so that's a fun story. She also, it's like in the third book, she just has drawn dicks all over the page, and they turn up at 3 a.m. just these little like puppy like things go like creepy along the floor. I sneak into a room, she has it was like a box of multicolored dicks just sitting in the bedroom, you know, and it's just sort of like an orgy with, you know,
it
anthropomorphic penis things, and they're like fluffy and rainbow colored and yeah.
Well, I just listened to as everyone knows, my favorite podcast is My Favorite Murder. Love those girls. And they did an episode on Ed Gein. And Ed Gein is who inspired a lot of movies and stories. Very creepy dude.
Nipple belts.
Yes, nipple belt. Well, also I didn't know this part though. When they finally raided his house, the detectives found a box of vulvae that he had harvested from corpses in a graveyard. Wow. So a box of female genitalia that he was just keeping.
So that pretty much fast.
Yeah. Right. Anyhow, yeah. I'm not sure why I thought of that, but I thought that was.
Some people make daisy chains.
There's some real crazy shit out there.
Dude, don't ever end a sentence like a story like that with "I'm not sure why I thought of that." Just tie it into something, because otherwise you're just like, "I'm just a weird pervert crazy person. I'm not sure why I think of those things. Would you like to go to the bathroom with me?"
Wait. And then she broke up with me.
Then she broke up with me.
Excellent.
Speaking of a box of vulvae, I would like to take just a couple minutes.
Wait, another punchline on this. Is this the story you tell when you're trying to pick up hitchhikers?
Oh my gosh.
You just pull the car up and you say, "So there was a box of vulvae. Anyway, would you like a lift?"
Yeah.
Guess what's in this box? You can only
Don't mind the hatch in the front seat, the cable ties. We'll have a great home time.
I'm just thinking of those Halloween things, you know, it's like put your hands in the box and you have to guess what it is. It's like, is it dried vulva?
Well, what would that feel? No, I don't want to know.
Worst potpourri ever.
Moving on. All right. So somehow we've been going at this for like 53 minutes already. And
have said nothing useful.
But because of that, I would really like to hear just a couple of minutes about kind of your works in progress, you know, what you've got coming up or what you're excited that you're writing and, or what might be coming up next year, anything you want to tell us. So in for all of us, we can all do this. This will be a big, it will be like a box of vulvae.
My mom always said life was like a box of vulvae.
Like the deeper in you are, the more likely you are to be arrested.
Hey, come on, I started. I can't stop.
Oh man.
I
don't know why I thought of that. That's gonna be my new favorite.
That is excellent.
That's like the get out of jail free card for perverts. I don't know why I thought of that, officer.
Michael Brent. Tell us what you've got coming up, man.
Oh, after that, it's really hard to know what to say.
Sorry.
Wow. Anyways, holy crap, it's really hard to like get started on something else. I just have horrible thoughts in my head right now.
I can send you
all of which end with, "I don't know why I thought of that," and then she broke up with me. I am working on a really cool story. Actually, I'm finishing up. It's about five people wake up in a white room on gurneys, and it's all closed in. And there is a little iPad behind a mesh cage on the wall, and it turns on, and there's a guy wearing a big smiley face, and he says, "I'm Mr. Do-Good, and we're going to play a scavenger hunt." And they are given instructions that they have to follow or face pretty dire consequences. And the instructions get progressively worse, you know, things like take the baby out into the street and leave a body behind. And there are no bodies available, so they have to figure out how to supply one in the time provided, kind of thing. So, and they all have a reason for being there. My books tend to be like, there's structure to them in that, it doesn't tend to be really random events. It tends to be events that have something tying them together. So that's kind of the fun of it is hopefully for my readers is it's a very differently structured book. There's this main through line of the scavenger hunt and each character has their own section. And so when their section starts, it pauses the main storyline and jumps them back to their backstory. It's kind of modeled on the structure of the Lord of the Rings series. And so I'm having a lot of fun with it. Hopefully the readers like it too.
Awesome.
Sounds really interesting.
Pippa, what do you got going on?
So I'm working on a story called Tupolak at the moment. It's a revenge story about a woman whose child is killed in a car accident, and her mother family's from Greenland, and they're sort of following ancient traditions in order to revenge on this guy that's caused her to be run off the road and little boy to die. Other than that,
cool.
So that story, I'd love to submit it to an anthology, but I'm like, yeah, I'm moving house now, so I'll write it or I won't. We've got a Halloween anthology book that's in the works, a Christmas one that's pretty much written, a Valentine's one for next year, finishing the last 25 pages edit of Mike's first book of Pumpkin Guts,
yeah,
and getting my really, really intricately named erotic comedy series sex book finished.
I don't know why I thought of that.
And then she broke up with me.
Yeah. I know.
But I've still got the cat.
Uh-oh. She's got angry mammary face going on.
Resting tit face.
Yes.
Yep.
Rebecca's going to put that on a shirt for us.
Well, Mike, what about you?
The back
you...
should be like Wham Bam Mammary Slam.
Oh, yeah, man.
I like that, too.
That's a good one.
All right, Mike, you're up, man.
Oh,
just a few more words, buddy.
Can Pip just talk for me?
Where'd you go?
I just keep saying words and embarrassing myself. Sir.
Okay, that'll do.
Oh, God. So basically, like Pip said, with the move and all that stuff, a lot of stuff's kind of paused. I'm kicking around an idea about people in a church and evil nuns, which is always fun, which will be a kind of an expansion on a few other little story threads that I'm busy playing with. There's nothing more to tell, I'm afraid. I'm just filling the void by speaking mostly.
It's all good.
He's like, someone start talking, please.
Yeah, this man a beer.
Yeah, I'd like to say that that's the problem, but it's not. So at the moment, basically, Pip and I are prepping for October for Deadflix. We're talking, oh yeah, with the little doodad.
No religion.
Nope.
Nope. My nuns are particularly fun. They actually run a
fun.
They're international, fully international. They wear full white habits. Although I was corrected the other day that the habit is just the head part. Apparently, I didn't know this. I've never dated a nun myself, so this is completely news to me.
Yeah, he got nun.
Oh man!
And Pip is making nun jokes all week. Ding.
Time to let our hair down now.
All right, Jane, you gotta. Yes.
She's I renounce you.
Let's see it.
That seems.
There's a button in there.
Well, the contrast settings on my computer just blew out when that thing appeared.
There we go.
Compared to my eggnog skin, that's quite red.
Yeah,
it's like raspberry pink.
Oh, that's a lot of hair.
Yeah.
Well, Jane, you gotta save Mike here. Take it away. Tell us what you're working on.
Just.
Yeah. No, I'm seriously, really quick. I don't think I'm okay with how this thing went, because I was okay as long as all the women had artificial ugly going on, but now they're all like, let their hair down, and I'm feeling stunningly ugly right now.
I feel like I just found one of Jason's vulvas.
Oh yeah. That makes everything feel pretty. Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. I just had to say that. My self-esteem got the best of me there.
Here now. Oh, what are we working on?
Jane, should I do a screen share to show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Jane and Captain Trainwreck are working on something together. So theirs might be a shared experience.
Yes.
Let's do it.
If it will let me.
Ooh, you're supposed to have it pulled up before you do that. Is that porn?
Oh.
The portal opens December 2019 beneath an escaped demon and a snarky cat face off against the seven deadly sins.
I like it.
That's cool, guys.
Yep, we finished Beneath. We're on the second book right now, and we're about a sixth through it, right?
Ish.
A little bit more.
hammer down the fraction, ladies. We all want to know if it's a sixth or a seventh.
Exactly.
After I've put my words in tonight.
Yeah, I'm putting in today because I'm at the in-laws' house. And
no, that looks really awesome, lady. And I'm trying here. Where is? Because since you guys had your little screen share thing, maybe I can do the same thing. I don't know if my computer can handle opening two things at once.
Ooh.
I'll just keep talking.
Wait, it's really nice meeting you all before this thing fizzles.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So I
just did a double click and it's.
So I'm working on a screen share. I'm just doing a short story collection, and I'm in the editing phase, which everyone knows is fantastic. It's super fun. But the cool thing is my publisher is a small press publisher, and they're actually really fun to work with. So they've made it fairly as painless as editing can be, really. So we are, I think we only have a couple stories left before it's ready to go out to some potential readers and reviewers. And at that time, we'll kind of see what people think of it. But I'm really excited because I love short stories. And so this is the first time I actually get to share a published collection of short stories. So let me see if I can do this little screen share like Katie did. That way I can be fancy too. All right. So
that was amazing.
Where did it go?
Show us again.
Where did it go? Oh, there we go. Oh, it's kind of small there. A Flutter of Darkness is what it's called. But yeah, all right. Now how do I get this off the screen?
There you go.
There we go. Oh, no. I don't know how to work these buttons. Oh, all right. Well, guys, we are out of time tonight, guys. I feel like we all really gained some valuable knowledge tonight. And everyone.
And then we broke up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we broke up. I think when you could say the high point of the show is talking about a cat getting chucked off of a loft, you're in real trouble.
I think that's pretty much the deal.
That should be the high point of every story.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us on our Bald is Beautiful show. And to everyone out there watching and commenting, especially Rebecca and Stacy, because you guys were our top commenters tonight. Thank you so much for getting involved. We really love it. It gives us a good laugh, and it encourages us to talk about other things than besides vulvas.
And cats.
So, all right, that's it for this week. This has been Spilling Ink. Make sure you like it, share it if you want to, and tune in next week for another show. So take care, guys.
Bye. Cheers.